Hi, birth workers. This one's for you. In an ideal world, VBAC parents would be treated just like any other birthing parents. In today's world, most medical providers sadly don't fully support VBAC parents. However, 90% of parents with a prior cesarean are good candidates to attempt a VBAC. This is why we have created the Advanced VBAC Doula Certification Program. In this doula course, we share evidence-based data for you to educate your clients, teach you the tools on helping them how to process past fears and trauma, or helping them decide if VBAC is even right for them. You will feel better prepared to support them during this beautiful experience. All VBAC certified doulas are listed on our website so parents know who you are. To learn more, go to thevbaclink.com. Hello, everybody. Welcome to the show. We have our friend Kaylee with us and her little wee, tiny little newborn.
Hi, everyone.
Oh, my gosh. Welcome to the show. And so how old is your baby?
He's just turned 3 months. He was born a month early, though.
Okay, 3 months and a month early. We're going to talk about why he was born a month early. You guys, today we're going to be sharing some stories and talking a little bit about cholestasis. So this is something that we actually don't have a lot on the show. When you were listening, Kaylee, I don't think
I've heard a single episode. Yeah.
Yeah. And did you hear about it in general on other platforms? Like, was it a super talked
Not
about?
Not really. No, I found it online on Facebook. I'm in the ICP Care Facebook group, and that's super helpful. They're amazing in there and super knowledgeable. But yeah, it's not very common. It's quite rare. I think it's like 1 in 1,000 women who end up getting it.
Yeah.
So yeah, it's not very well known about. And even with providers, like providers don't know about it very well either.
Yeah. And I think that can be part of the problem, right? And why? Because we've got providers that kind of don't know a lot about it. And then it can cause a little bit of a panic. And then a lot of the times it can cause cesarean, lead to cesarean. So we're going to be talking about that today and sharing her stories. But I do have a review of the week. So I want to get into that and then turn the time over to cute Kaylee. This is from Corey, and it doesn't say where it's from. Somewhere in the universe it's from. It says, VBAC link is gold. It says, all of the things I did to prepare for pursuing a VBAC after 2 C-sections, I think is one of the most important. I was listening to this podcast. Hearing these stories and information from Megan and Julie made the dive into learning about VBAC and birth in general so much easier. I was blessed with my VBA 2C, so VBAC after 2 C-sections, on January 11th with my sweet Bryn Lynn. And I sincerely believe I wouldn't have gotten to the point without this resource and community. Thank you guys for all that you do. Oh, that just makes me smile so much because this community, oh my gosh. I mean, Kaylee and I were just kind of talking about this. I mean, yes, Julie and I are here, but there's this community, this absolutely incredible community, and all of the people coming forth to share their stories, right? And Kaylee, you just said it yourself when you were like, it's like all of these people that came and shared these stories impacted you, right?
Yeah, totally.
Yeah, they are the reason. You are the reason. Right here, Kaylee, you are the reason why what Corey said in this review is possible. By sharing your stories, by coming in the community on Facebook and on Instagram, and having these conversations and learning, and also being vulnerable. There are so many times where I see posts where it's like the most vulnerable, genuine post. And I can't explain to you the outpouring of love that I see come in for this person from this community, the VBAC link community, this is the VBAC community in general. Oh my gosh, you are all amazing. Thank you so much. And yes, if you want to join that community, check us out on Facebook at the VBAC link community. It is a private group. You do have to answer the questions to get in. So just keep that in mind. If you're not answering questions, you might not be allowed in. And on Instagram. And of course, if you have a review of the week, or if you want to have a review that I could share for the review of the week, please do so. We would love that.
Hi, my name is Megan. Welcome to the VBAC Link podcast. I am a VBAC after 2 C-section mama, a wife, doula, and VBAC educator. This podcast was created to hold space for those wanting to know their options for birth after cesarean. It is a space where you will likely find yourself getting better educated, relate to stories like your own, and finding the inspiration to help you have a better birth experience. Although we will be sharing stories related to cesarean and VBAC, this podcast is for anyone and everyone who wants to receive evidence-based information and learn how to avoid unnecessary or undesired cesareans. The purpose of this podcast is to educate and inform. It is not meant to replace advice from any other medical professional.
Okay, Kaylee, are you ready? I'm so ready.
I am ready. Yes.
Awesome.
Oh,
Yeah, I get to turn the time.
I don't know where to start. Should we start with talking a little bit about cholestasis, I guess, so
Yeah,
that
I
they
think that's a.
understand the risk?
I think that, yeah, well, the risk, the
And the symptoms,
symptoms,
yeah.
yeah, and then
So for
also how it
me,
can be missed, and then how it can sometimes cause, well, I mean, it kind of goes with the risk, but there are other things that can lead to, like, can come in, I should say, from, be led from cholestasis. And I actually even had a client myself, a VBAC client, after 2 C-sections. She had cholestasis, preeclampsia,
Oh.
VBAC after 2 cesarean and induced.
Wow, good for
Right?
her.
Yeah, but she, I mean, preeclampsia, right? Okay,
That's a lot.
let's talk
That's a
about the
lot.
things. So what are the symptoms that you, one, maybe experienced, and two, that there may be that someone might not experience?
Yeah. So for me, it was intense itching, mainly on the bottom of my feet and on the sole, like the palm of my hands. But I had it everywhere. Like, I have scars on my ankles, up my arms, like on my
From
belly, just
scratching.
from scratching incessantly. And it's an itch that you can't really scratch. Like, it's in your blood that's making you so itchy. So you can scratch all you want and it's like temporary relief. But as soon as you stop, it's like, oh, I broke down in tears so many times and had ice packs at my feet and on my hands while I'm trying to sleep. And another symptom, darker urine output, and some upper right quadrant pain.
Yes.
Um,
Yeah.
so those are
So
very common. And some people also experience jaundice.
I was going to say yellowing, jaundice, decreased
And
appetite.
you're more likely to get preeclampsia and gestational diabetes.
Yeah. So yeah, so not nausea, like feeling unwell, dark urine, lack of urine output, which a lot of the times dark urine is the beginning of that. It's like your kidneys are warning you and then you stop. Yeah, even this is what I had a client, not the one that I was telling you about, but another client, she said that her bowels, like her poop, smell really weird, like
Yeah,
abnormal.
I've heard that before too.
Yeah, and that's the first time when she was like, that was actually one of her first symptoms that she like noticedly. She was like, she's like thinking back, she's like, yeah, I guess I kind of was itchy, but she's like, I wasn't until later, like itchy till later. But that was one of the things that she's like, I just thought I ate something weird, you know? So yeah, I had decreased appetite, pain in your, you know, belly and your quadrants, jaundice, and of course, itching. Those are
Itching.
the signs, the main signs. And so,
And the severity of the itching can vary
differs.
greatly between cases. So like the first time it was quite mild, and then it progressively got worse through my 3 pregnancies. And that's different for everyone that experiences it. So if you have any itching, you should ask for LFTs and bile acid tests from your provider. And itching can also precede the bile acids rising. And the elevated bile acids is what's dangerous for the baby. It increases the risks in the baby where they might pass meconium before birth. And also stillbirth risk goes up a lot if the bile acids are above 40.
Too high. Yeah. And so when you are pregnant, if you are having the symptoms, definitely go in and get checked, like she said, get these tests. And then if you have cholecystitis, if you test positive and things are looking like you have it is something that may increase like extra testing, extra visits, because you do want to keep a close eye on this. And again, like she said in the beginning about, it's really rare. So there's even right here, it shows on this link that I'm going to put in the show notes. Just it's like from the Cleveland Clinic, but it shows one to two in 1,000 people during pregnancy will experience it. So it's pretty, pretty low, but it can be a serious thing. And so also, I was going to ask you, because I know my clients have in the past. They've been given some things to try and kind of control, to minimize, to control, to lower things, to try and continue pregnancy to a good, safe, term stage. Were you given anything like that?
Yeah, I was put on a medication called Ursodiol, and it helps lower bile acids to make it a little bit safer for the baby so you can continue. With my last pregnancy, it was very severe levels. They were over 100. So it was kind of touch and go there whether we could get them to 36 weeks or not. They were talking about inducing me at 34 weeks, and we ended up opting for non-stress tests and biophysical profile ultrasounds just to keep an eye on him. But yeah,
And he did well.
he was doing well. He had already passed meconium at third like sometime before I was induced though at 36 weeks. So it was time for him to come out. He was already in distress, so it was good that we did end up taking him out at 36 weeks, but he did great. Really
Good.
great.
Good. And that's another thing I'd like to kind of just drop and note that if you do have cholestasis, it may be something that brings you to something like an induction that's earlier than expected. And obviously, here we're going to share this story in just a second about VBAC and induction. It's possible, it's totally doable, but that is a thing. And so she was mentioning bile, and it affects like it's in the liver, right? Right? Am I correct? It's in the liver. And we don't really know why. I don't know why. Do we know exactly why it
They don't.
happens?
They think
No.
it's something to do with pregnancy hormones in the placenta, but they don't know for sure. There's some sort of genetic factor as well, but no
Yeah.
woman in my family that I know has had it. So
Yeah.
I think it's just something that can happen sometimes.
Yeah, and I have heard the hormones like estrogen, progesterone too much in the body at the time. And so, kind of just going to circle back around again. If you've had any of these symptoms or if you're having any of these symptoms, it's okay. Don't hesitate. Go in and get checked out.
And if you get a negative result and still have symptoms,
Go
ask your
back.
provider to keep testing you.
Yes, go back and check again. Okay, so baby number one,
Twins.
twins, baby number one.
Twins. One and two.
Okay.
First pregnancy.
So twins, you had symptoms.
I did, yes. I got it pretty early on, and they tested me, and it was negative. And they just kind of put me on Ursodiol before anything came back positive, and like they didn't do any more testing or anything. I didn't have any itching. The medication must have made it go away somewhat. And yeah, I was only 21 when I was pregnant with the twins, so I was pretty young. I didn't know much of anything. I knew I wanted a vaginal birth. I had actually switched providers in my third trimester to somebody who was comfortable with vaginal birth with twins, and they ended up being breech when they decided they needed to take them out. So, yeah. And it wasn't due to cholestasis, but I did have them at 36 weeks because one of the twins had stopped growing, so they took them out.
IUGR.
Yeah, he was quite significantly smaller than his brother.
Okay. That can happen with twins too, I know.
Yeah, totally. Yeah, my twin A was 6 pounds 7 ounces, and twin B was 4 pounds four.
Oh
So it's
yeah.
quite a big difference.
So
And
you had
yeah,
a
so C-section
yeah.
with them. They were in the NICU for 2 weeks. Yeah, and then I ended up getting pregnant again when the twins were 16 or 17 months old. And I knew I did not want to do that again, having a C-section. So I found supportive midwives and got on with them. And unfortunately, I don't know if it's in like Canada, but they don't allow home birth for your first VBAC for some reason. Maybe it was just those midwives. I don't know. But I really wanted a home birth, and they were like, no, let's do hospital. Like, it's safer. And I was like, okay, well, as long as like I can still have my VBAC, I'll just do that. And yeah, the pregnancy went well. I thought I wasn't going to get it again. No itching. And then I hit 34 weeks and the dreaded itching started again. And I kind of had a feeling that I had had it that first pregnancy too, from like my own research. So I had mentioned it to my midwives beforehand. So we were kind of like looking for it, seeing if it would happen. And they sent me for testing right away at 34 weeks. It came back negative. So they ended up testing me again weekly. And then at 36 weeks, they tested me and my levels were, or my liver function tests were very high. So like my liver was basically failing. And they didn't even wait for the bile acids to come back. They just brought me in for an induction.
And an and what week again?
I was 36 weeks and 2
Okay.
days
Okay.
when they started my induction.
So technically preterm.
So when I went in, they started with a Foley balloon to help dilate my cervix. And that was awful. It's like a torture device. Swear. But it was effective, I guess. It dilated me and then it fell out. And I don't know if they didn't have a nurse for me or something, but I was waiting like 8 hours to like for them to continue my induction. The OB came in and he wanted to break my water. And I said, no, let's start low Pitocin. And he's like, well, it's not really going to do anything if you don't break your water too. And I'm like, okay, well, let's see how
Yes.
it goes. So we did that. Labor was going smoothly. I loved being in the shower. It was amazing. The shower was like, oh. And then they made me get out because his heart rate kept going, like dipping up really high. So they wanted to like get me out and be able to monitor him a little bit better. And that's when things got like really intense. And I felt like I wasn't able to cope as well after I got out of the shower. I think in the back of my mind, like I was still pretty young with him too for my first VBAC. I was only 24, and I know that like uterine rupture risk is very low, but for some reason I just couldn't get that out of my mind. And like every contraction I'd have, I just like feel like I was being ripped open and so scared that I was having like a uterine rupture. So I ended up, it was like 32 hours into my induction, and I was still at like a 4 centimeters just because I wasn't letting my body relax and like do the work. I was kind of like tensing and fighting every contraction because I was terrified. I ended up getting an epidural at 1 a.m. and 5 hours later, I woke up and was fully dilated and pushed for 15 minutes and he came out.
15? 1 5?
Yeah, 1 5.
Oh my
I
goodness.
grabbed him as he was coming out and pulled him up onto my chest, and it was just like this amazing feeling, like, oh my God, I did it. Like the high that comes with that is unbelievable.
Yeah.
I just kept like looking at everyone saying, I did it, I did it. Such an
Absolutely.
amazing feeling.
It really is.
And I had fought with the OB that was on call a little bit. The one that wanted to break my water. He kept saying, like, oh, does she want to do this all night long? Like, let's just go for a C-section. And I'm like, yeah, actually, I do want to do this all night long. And you can, like, stay out of my room until I'm pushing. My midwife's got this. Thanks. Unfortunately, because I had to be induced, it had to be overseen by an OB. So my midwife kind of like ran show and was able to like be there with me and like do everything, but he had to be there in case anything went wrong, I guess.
That's kind of normal. A lot of the times when there's a hospital midwife, there's OBs that are they kind of oversee them.
So yeah, that was my first induced VBAC. And then I just recently had another induced VBAC. With this one, my levels went up high. I think it was 28 weeks that I tested
Oh,
positive. So it was
so
sooner.
significantly sooner.
And they went from like 0 to 100 within a matter of like 5 days. So they put me on Ursodiol immediately as soon as it came back positive. And I was being monitored weekly with NSTs, non-stress tests. And they were sending me for biophysical profiles as well weekly, which is like an ultrasound to check on the baby's well-being. And he was doing well. So we were just keeping going with that. And unfortunately, the Ursodiol did not help my itching this time around. It was so severe. I was in tears pretty much daily from the severity of the itching. It was just really bad this time. And the mental health aspect of having that incessant itching, I don't think is talked about a lot either. It's like it really
That,
gets to you. It's
oh,
depressing.
I would not do well with that. I would
Nope.
find myself getting very anxious, probably, like out of control, like.
Even now, if I get an itch, it's like I have PTSD. I'm like, oh my God, it's not going to stop. Like, freak myself out and like work myself up. Like, I remember that after my second pregnancy as well. It was like I get a bug bite and I would just have to like itch and itch and itch and itch until it was like bleeding and like, oh, just bad. Don't know how to leave itching alone now. So yeah, his levels were very severe, or my levels, I guess. My liver function tests were some of the worst that my OB had ever seen.
Interesting.
So yeah, and it was just really bad.
Hey everyone, this is Megan. Preparing for my VBA2C was pretty lonely at times. This is why I, along with Julie, created a Facebook community for all the parents preparing for their VBACs. You can find the link to the community in the episode notes today, or head over to facebook.com and search the VBAC Link community. This is our safe space to share our stories, tips, and advice on how to achieve a VBAC and ask each other questions. Just remember, studies show 60 to 80% of people who attempt a VBAC will be successful. We're here for each other on this journey. To join, go over to facebook.com and search the VBAC Link community and start feeling the love and support today.
And I had actually applied for midwives. We had just moved to Alberta from BC, pretty much as we were finding out that we were pregnant again with Henley here. And I applied as soon as I found out I was pregnant for the midwives out here. And I ended up hearing back from the midwives in Edmonton, which is like an hour and a half away, that they could see me out there. But once I got the itching and cholestasis, I was like, duh, just transfer me to an OB in where I live, and it's just easier for me. Then all my appointments will be out here, and I don't have to drive an hour and a half to 2 hours to appointments, and in the middle of winter. And yeah, so they scheduled my induction for exactly 36 weeks because of the high levels. They didn't want me going past that because With levels over 100 bile acids, the stillbirth risk goes up very high after 37 weeks.
Did they
So,
give you like a percentage or anything like that?
yeah, I think it's like upwards of 15%.
Oh, wow.
They said, yeah, so it's with very severe levels. If levels stay under 40, your risk of stillbirth is around the same as anyone else's. They go up like 3% over 40, and then over 100, it's even more. So it was a bit touch and go there. They were talking about inducing at 34 weeks, and we were able to like get them to that like safer 36, still preterm, but higher likely that he wouldn't need additional support. I was induced exactly 36 weeks. I actually had influenza B when I had to be induced. So,
That's
yeah,
miserable.
as if labor isn't hard enough alone, I had to have influenza B. Just great.
Miserable. Yes.
Yeah. One perk to that, though, is we got a private room like right away. I didn't have to labor in the triage until I was far enough along to get my delivery room or whatever. They put me right in there immediately. I was kind of able to like get set up and feel like it was my space, get more comfortable. So, yeah, they started with the Foley balloon again to open the cervix. They can't do Cervidil or a few of the other like cervical
Cytotec.
ripening. Yeah, those ones, because it really does increase the risk of uterine rupture with induction. But the Foley balloon is a safer option. And it works. Within like an hour and a half this time, my cervix was 4 centimeters
Wow.
from like barely one. And it fell out, and it was kind of funny. I was standing there talking to my husband, and I took a step to go towards the bathroom, and it just like flopped out and just swung like this line of blood up and down the floor. It
Oh,
was like a bloody, like total bloody show, like swung
mucus.
in like a perfect line.
Oh my gosh.
Because they attach like the tube to your leg, they like tape it to your leg. So like
Oh,
when it falls out,
yes.
it just like
Yes.
swung through my legs. So my husband pulled the nurse call button, and he's like, "Oh, it doesn't come." She comes in, she's like laughing. She's like, "Oh gosh." Ended up cleaning me up, and things picked up pretty quick from there this time. I felt it was much more manageable though. Like, I don't know if the nurses were nicer this time and they were doing the Pitocin a bit slower. So I remember with my first VBAC, the contractions just felt like back to back, like I wasn't getting a break at all. And it was like really mentally wearing me out after 32 hours I hadn't slept, ended up getting the epidural. But this time it was like, more of like, it felt like more of a maybe natural progression. I don't know. I've never had natural labor, but for me, it was much more, I was able to handle it a lot better. And maybe that's because I knew what to expect this time, so it wasn't as scary.
Could be.
Yeah, I don't know. Or maybe I've heard too with cholestasis, the bile acids or something make Pitocin more effective. So maybe I didn't need as much of it this time because my levels were higher. I don't know, but it was much more peaceful this time, and I kind of knew what to expect. Even though I was sick, I labored in the shower for a little bit with the mobile monitor, because they with inductions they want to be able to monitor the baby
Yeah.
constantly, which I know it's talked about a lot on here as something that is not ideal, but
Yeah.
for
And in, even if no induction with VBAC, it's really, really common, if not 100%, that your hospital is going to want that monitoring.
And having that mobile monitor though is so helpful. If your hospital has one of those, definitely ask, because Oh my gosh, it's so nice to be able to get up and walk around and move and
Yes.
shower. And yeah, and unfortunately, because of the flu, we were kind of battling a fever. I had a
Yes.
fever. So as soon as my Tylenol would wear off, my fever would spike and then his heart rate would go up. And I had an anterior placenta, so it was kind of
In the
in the
front.
way of the monitoring, and it was hard to get him constantly. So they ended up wanting to do the electrode.
The IUPC and the FSC
Yeah, I think so. It's the one that they like, it's like
on the head.
internal, they put it in the scalp.
Okay,
Yeah.
that's an FSC, fetal scalp
Yeah.
electrode.
And even that, unfortunately, didn't work very well. So I was like bedbound, but I was so sick that I didn't even really care. I was just like switching sides, laboring through it, using the gas. Loved the gas this time. And yeah, I ended up getting to an 8 centimeters, and the OB, unfortunately, was not the OB that I had had through my pregnancy. She had gone vacation for my induction, unfortunately, and I was really sad about that. But the OB on call kind of came in and he's like, this is taking pretty long. I think it's time that we start thinking about a C-section. I'm getting worried about, your scar. And I'm like, I've done this before and it took longer last time. I am not having a C-section.
Good for
And
you.
he I don't think he really liked that though, because he's like, well, then you're getting an epidural, because at least if you have the epidural and something happens, we can rush you and cut you open faster and blah 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 blah. And I'm like, okay, it hasn't even been 24 hours, and it's only been maybe 12 hours of hard active labor here. My C-section scar is strong. It's been over 7 years since my C-section. I feel like it's strong. We're both doing well. Yes, I'm sick. Yes, his heart rate keeps going up when I have a fever, but as soon as the Tylenol kicks in, it's going back down and his tracing is normal. So
Yeah.
why would I have a C-section?
And the fact that you're having a fever is more likely to the fact that you are sick versus you have infection.
Yeah. Exactly. And they tested me when I got there and they knew that I had influenza B. So, and I tested negative for group B strep. So I was just kind of like having to fight with another OB for my VBAC again, which is really frustrating. But yeah. So he ended up leaving the room, and my doula and my nurse were both like, wow, you're amazing. I'm actually so impressed with you, saying no to him. Not, I guess a lot of people just go with what the doctor says.
Well,
Um,
I
and that's
guess
why we end up with so many unneeded C-sections.
yeah. I mean, we've talked about it before on this show where it's like, well, I didn't go to years and years of medical school. And, okay, I guess. I mean,
Yeah.
that's same thing with me. Like, I was like, okay, and went down and had a C-section when I completely did not need a C-section.
Yeah. And you would hope that doctors are saying that when it's actually medically necessary and not when it's convenient for them. I think he was getting like, oh, it's almost been 24 hours. I'm almost off shift or something. I don't know what that was about, but I was not having it. And it's actually funny. When he checked me, he's like, oh, you're 8 centimeters, but he's negative two position and not coming down. And he's like, it's probably time to do a C-section. And I was
Oh,
like, no, it's
oh
not actually.
my gosh. He really wanted to do a C-section.
Yeah. And then, so I'm like, no, I'm not having a C-section. He ended up leaving the room. And pretty much immediately, I had a super strong contraction. And I jumped off of the bed trying to get away from it, because apparently that can help. And I kind of grabbed my nurse's shoulders, the poor thing. She's like this tiny little 20-something nurse, just grabbed her shoulders. and my body was pushing, and she's and I was like farting and like things were moving down there.
Because I
And
bet that
she's
baby
like,
was coming down quick too, and a lot of air was
probably
moving.
like that quick movement of me like hopping up just like brought him down. And she's like, "Are you pushing?" And then my doula's like, "Well, that's a good sign hearing me first." And I was like, "I don't think so." But my body was just doing it. And then I barely made it back on the bed before his head was out.
Oh my
And
gosh. So is the provider even in there?
no, he had just left the room telling me I needed a C-section because I wasn't progressing.
I didn't, yeah, well, I knew he had left, but I didn't know if she was like beeping him back in, like, come back
I
in.
guess, he's like down the hallway at that point and his head was out. I had made it back onto the bed, thankfully. My nurse was there, like getting the electrode out of his scalp, kind of like panicking a little bit.
I'm
New
sure.
nurse. And she's like, "You need to keep pushing." And I'm like thinking in my mind, like, "No, I need a rest for a second. Like, his head's out. He's fine." I need in my like soul that he was okay. So I like took like half of a second to rest, and then my body was pushing again, and he was out.
Oh my
And
gosh.
he had the umbilical cord wrapped around his neck and his armpit. So I'm
Oh.
wondering, maybe that's why he wasn't coming down.
Could be.
Maybe he was kind of like tangled up in there a little bit and couldn't come down fully, and then maybe that quick movement that I did to hop out of bed was just like enough to let him come
Let
down.
him
And
go.
yeah, it was like so quick. I was kind of like looking around. My doula ended up like running out into the hallway to call my OB back. And my nurse was like frantic. She's like, "Oh my gosh, it's my first baby." I was like, "Come on."
Oh, and it was a V-back.
I'm like looking around the room, like, "Whoa, what just happened?" Like, it went from like literally 5 minutes ago being told it was time for a C-section to my baby on my chest.
Yes. That is amazing. And you know, maybe that person needed to leave to also relieve some stress so baby could come down. That's another
Yeah,
thought that I had.
I think that was it. And maybe my baby was like, "Yeah, we're not going for surgery, Mom. Let's show this OB what's up."
Yeah, seriously, it reminds me of, you know, I'm trying to think, is it the tiger, the lion? I can't remember the thing, but like when you're being chased or when you're being in a, like a hostile environment, you either tense up, right? Or you run or whatever, like you've got all these senses. And you could have like maybe like, nope, I am not having my baby with you in this room. I've had enough of your C-section talk. And then the second, yeah, so cool. And so after with all the babies, but especially with this one, because your levels were so bad, were there any complications?
I guess I did touch on this a little bit before. I forgot though, during my birth story there, when they broke my water. Because I did allow it earlier this time, because I felt with my first VBAC that that actually helped like speed things up a little bit. So I did allow them to break my water and start Pitocin at the same time this time. And when they broke my water, it was like old meconium in my water. So they weren't too worried about it. Thankfully, it wasn't like that. OB seemed pretty C-section happy, and he was still like, he's like, "Oh, it's like no big deal. We'll just monitor him. It's okay. Like, there's the risk there for aspiration, but it's not a total like risk that that'll happen." So they were just kind of monitoring that. When he came out, he was fine. Like for being 36 weeks, he was breathing good. They like wiped his face because there was like the meconium and everything on his face. But no, he was great. It was more me that I was like worried. I was like, "Is he okay?" And they're like, "He's fine."
Good. Good. That's so good to know. I was just curious because, yeah, early, super high levels, you know, induction, fevers, all the things. So that's so good to hear that. It was really great.
Yeah, even my twins, they were 36 weeks, 2 days when I had my C-section. They were in the NICU for 2 weeks and it was just for feeding and growing. They
Yeah.
didn't like know how to stop. And
Right.
then with my now 5-year-old, he was totally healthy when he came out too. It was
Awesome.
36 plus 4 by the time he was born because my induction took so long with him. But yeah, he was healthy. He did have jaundice quite bad though, so he needed the bilirubin lights. And then with my baby now, he also had jaundice, but he was able to stay off of the lights. Like it was just under that level for needing phototherapy. I think it's pretty common with early babies anyways, so I don't know if that had anything to do with cholestasis in general or if it was just them being
Yeah.
early, it's more
Yeah.
likely to happen.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah.
Oh, well, thank you so much for sharing your story and talking more about cholestasis with us. Like you said, there's not a lot out there. It's not very common, so it
Yeah.
makes sense that it's not talked about that often.
Yeah.
However, uterine rupture isn't very common, but it's talked about all
It's
the
hard to, yeah.
time.
Yeah.
So, but it's good. It's good to be aware. It's good to understand the symptoms and what's going on and why.
Yeah.
And so I'm so grateful that you shared your stories. I'm so grateful that everyone is healthy and happy and everyone's a wonderful and you're smiling and you've had good
Yeah.
birth experiences and maybe some healing birth experiences. You've
Yeah,
also showed
totally.
yourself you could stand up to pressuring doctors.
Yes. Yeah, and I honestly thank my doula for being there for my last birth because I don't know if I'd have had the confidence to be that firm with such a like
Yes.
pushy, like this is what's gonna happen doctor. Where like we had kind of talked about it previously that like she can't say anything for me, but
Right.
she'll be there to support and like give me the power to advocate for myself. And I
Yes.
totally felt that power from her. She was amazing. I'd
Yeah.
like to shout her out too, Little Love's doula in Red Deer. She's amazing.
Yay.
Stephanie, she's great. If anyone's in Red Deer, Alberta, definitely contact Stephanie from Little Love.
Well, you know we love doulas here and
Yes.
always encourage checking out a doula. We do have VBAC Link certified doulas. She's got her doula. Yeah,
I
it's
think she was
just.
also VBAC Link certified.
Was she? Okay, or
Yeah,
is she?
yeah.
That's so awesome. Yeah, so you can check out the VBAC Link doulas at the vbaclink.com/find-a-doula. And let me tell you, there are doulas now. Like, we're just, it's so fun to see like all the doulas in all the different states. Like, we're growing within the
Yeah.
states. And if you have a doula in mind that's not on the VBAC list, send them the link. We'd love to add them and help them support our VBAC clients. So, for our VBAC community. Well, thank you so much again.
Thank you.
Interested in sharing your VBAC? Head over to thevbaclink.com/share to submit your story. For information on all things VBAC, including online and in-person VBAC classes, the VBAC blog, the worldwide database for VBAC doulas, and more, head over to thevbaclink.com. Congratulations on starting your journey of learning and discovery with the VBAC Link.